It's a little program we like to call Let's Talk, and we appreciate your tuning in here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff Byers, Scott Giese with you, and it is time to get deadly serious. We have a very, very serious topic. Everybody, stop what you're doing and listen intently. These are very, very important matters that we need to discuss this morning.
Yeah, friends, we're going to tell you how to get the bonus ball, okay?
I always struggle to get the bonus ball,
you know? Folks, sometimes we cover the heavy-hitting issues. We're going to have some fun here for a while, okay? Again, first off, let's introduce our guest, Joe Schall. All right, Joe, first, good morning. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes, and thanks for pronouncing my last name correctly. When I played football, the announcer pronounced it Joe Schall occasionally. Thank you very much.
All right, now, free plug here to our friends from Town & Gown magazine. They do some really good reporting on featurey stuff. And their January issue, which I got mine at a convenience store. I mean, they're all over the place. You can get a free copy. And I just picked this up the other day, and I'm looking through it, and I see this story about pinball machines called Pinball Wizards. I'm like, oh, those were the days. I love those days because I can't find pinball machines anymore. So I found Joe, reached out to him, and Joe, I'm thrilled that you're here today just to have some fun. First off, let's get a little background. Tell us something about yourself, and you know what's with you and pinball machines? What's going on there? How'd this all get started?
Well, I am an editor for a government agency, but the reason I do that is to keep myself in money so that I can play pinball, so that I can collect, work on pinball machines. You know, it's a hobby that I love, and I started by playing at Penn State Hub, believe it or not, back in the 80s when I was a poor graduate student. And at that point, Penn State Hub basement had pinball machines, so did Playland downtown College Avenue and Campus Casino on College Avenue. I'm sure some listeners remember those days. And therefore, I got into playing for a while, and then I went to buy a game or two and found I couldn't fix them. And when I hired somebody to fix them at $60 an hour, I said, I have to learn how to do this myself. So I started working on fixing them and networking. I only have 8 pinball machines in my little collection, but I've owned 50 or so over the years, and I know people who own hundreds. I know a guy in Pittsburgh who owns 2,000 as an operator.
Wow.
And some of him are at my house right now as loaners. So I got into it as a graduate student and have been passionate about it ever since. And that Town & Gown article was a great opportunity to say I'm having monthly tournaments at my house for people, even though they're small, because I like to keep it going and to connect people with pinball.
Joe, I'm curious, just in doing this show over the years, one of the things that I absolutely love and am fascinated by is all of the various little cultures that we have. I do the wrestling announcing for Penn State, and there is definitely a wrestling culture, and I love being part of that. We have talked to folks that are old car enthusiasts, antique cars. There is certainly their own little community. Is there like a pinball convention? Do you guys get together? Is there just even just like a web page where you guys all get together and talk about the different machines that are out there and the ways to repair? Because I'm imagining that there is a culture here around the pinball machines.
Yes, and you mentioned cars and car repair. Mechanics, car repair, and pinball go together for a lot of people. There's an awful lot of crossover in that regard. And there's an incredible online community because with arcades, as we knew them, closing down, the pinball community online grew, and so did the market change, and pinball is still very alive and well, much more than you would expect in terms of what's out there. So the primary website is called pinside.com. That's PINSIDE.com. And that's where I and other enthusiasts go to say, okay, we even join clubs. I own this machine, I'm having this problem, what can I do about it? And people come back with advice, videos, and you can look at a thread that has maybe even 10,000 posts in it about a popular machine and read through that and see photos. People do restorations. But beyond that, there are many, many tournaments and conventions. There's in Pennsylvania. There's a show in Allentown in the spring and in York in the fall. And at a pinball show, you take machines to buy, sell, and trade, and you put them on free play. So there are hundreds of games that anybody can go in and play for, say, $20 for the day, and you play the machines as old and new as you can imagine. And vendors are there selling machines, and people like me are there buy, sell, and trading machines. So there is quite a community, a stronger community than you'd expect. It's just changed over the years because of how pinball has changed and manufacturing has changed.
Now, Joe, I believe, did I read right? You live in Bellefonte, is that right?
Bellefonte. I used to live in State College, yes.
Oh, okay.
Off Center Pike.
And you have, I guess what, you have these machines in your basement?
I do at the moment, yes, 8 machines in my basement.
Okay, because I noticed from the Town and Gown story, it mentions Silver Ball Sundays. Now, what is Silver Ball Sundays?
So that's the name that I and the few others who helped me work on these machines around here came up with the name for the monthly tournaments that we're having and for the website that I maintain. And that website then is Silver Ball, as in obviously pinball, and Sunday afternoons are when we hold the tournaments monthly. And so if somebody types in Silver Ball Sundays into a browser, they'll find that website easily. And there I include tabs to things like local pinball. There are places still to play local pinball. There's a movie theater with a machine, another movie theater with a machine. And the primary place to play where people may not know about is Champs Downtown on Allen Street has 10 pinball machines as well as many arcade games in the basement. They call it Fun Society. And that is a place to play. And there are 10 great titles there from the 80s and 90s. I sold some of the machines to the operator who operates them there. But you have to go there at the right time. They're open 7 p.m. till about 2 a.m. And so there are places to play.
Boy, I tell you what. You mentioned Playland. You mentioned Campus Casino. I'm like,
welcome to my high school years.
Those are names I haven't heard in a long time.
Yep.
Now, God forbid, we're going to go back to the Phi Psi 500. I don't think we want to go there. Okay, we're not going that far. But I mean, Joe, when I was reading the story, I'm just like, I started thinking, where have I seen a pinball machine? I totally forgot about movie theaters. Yes. The problem is there's like one machine,
yeah.
I think, right in the movie theater, just one. So besides your basement, there isn't any place around really where there are like lots and lots of machines. I mean, any, forget about State College. Go further than that. Is there anywhere out there that does this?
Oh, yes. You'd be shocked at how many there are available. And now often in the form of barcades, because what are called barcades, because pinball by itself doesn't make money. But in combination with beer, in combination with things like pool tables, just as at Champs Downtown, that's where pinball machines at least show up. So I mentioned pinside.com, which has a literal worldwide pin map that is maintained by the people who visit that site, and you can go to that site and do a search for places to play. Now, none of them are that close, but as an example, there's a bar in Pittsburgh that has 60 machines. And there are museums in most every state, what people call pinball museums, that are usually private collections. There's one in Hopewell, Pennsylvania, near the Pittsburgh airport, for instance. And they have hundreds of machines where you go and play for the day. There's a Las Vegas Pinball Hall of Fame with hundreds of machines, and you pay a price and you go pay for the day. There's a place in New Jersey. There's a place in Florida. So there are plenty of places to play, and when I'm traveling, I go to that pin map on pinside.com and just do a search and can easily find places to play and coin drop. And there are private collections. You just have to know the people. There are several people in town who have incredible private collections. They just tend to keep them close to the vest.
Pinball museums. Oh, you want to pass the Geritol, Ironhead? I'm feeling really old. Pinball museums. Yikes.
They just call them that. And they tend to be, they originated from somebody's private collection, usually. Sometimes somebody who had 500, 600, 800 machines. And they said, well, I'm going to make these available to the public. And then it becomes a place where they can either turn a profit or at least break even.
Well, and it is interesting and kind of fun how some things come around. So I have a now 8-year-old, and we love going to Northland Bowl because, well, he likes bowling, but also we like playing some of the arcade games afterward, and he especially loves, they have a 4-man Pac-Man game that you can play. So we get friends of his and his mom and I, and we have our little Pac-Man games out there, which I just love the fact that he loves it. But the other thing that he has really taken an interest in is the pinball machines. And my in-laws, my wife's parents, have a pinball machine in their basement.
Oh.
And I don't want to exaggerate, but it had to be 3 hours plus anyway that he and I just went down and we just got engrossed and we were having fun keeping track of each other's scores. And we played, you know, we don't go down there and play it every time we're there, but when we do, like every time we do, it's like, oh yeah, I man, this is fun. It's just fun.
Yes.
And do you remember the title?
I don't, and I should. Oh. We've played it enough. I will look that up and get it to you, because I don't have any idea, like, yeah, from a collector's standpoint, whether this is anything significant or not. I don't have any idea of that. Right. I just know it's fun to play.
And that's the bottom line. And kids will play fearlessly, and when they're introduced to it, often by their parents or grandparents, it's amazing how they'll take to it.
It is.
Much more so than a video game. And they'll say, you know, this is never the same twice. This is great fun. And they'll just like the visceral, full-body experience. And as compared to adults, they'll play without too many preconceptions. They'll just hit the ball around and maybe hit the flippers as much as they want. But they'll play again and again. I've experienced that many times.
So that is exactly
right. That's one of the joys of sharing it.
Yep.
And related to this, if I can break in here with, you asked by email a little bit about history. I can go through a quick history in 4 eras, if you wish, and we can talk about each if we have the time to do that. It won't take long.
Please.
All right.
So
go
ahead.
No, go ahead with the history. Right.
Joe, we only have Joe, we only have a couple minutes, so we have to take a break. Give us a brief history of pinball machines, because it sounds, Joe, I think this is Scott. I think we're roughly about the same age, and I can remember really old pinball machines, not some of the flashy ones with flashy lights and all that sort of thing. What's a history? How far back do pinball machines go?
So, yeah, I'll break it into 4 segments. I'll just do 1 segment, and then we'll see if we need to take a break. First,
okay.
I'll start with the segment. So the first era I'd call is really the 1930s, so in the back 90 years. For that decade, Depression-era decade, you could call them early electromechanicals. And so literally in that time, there was a carpenter in 1930 who wanted a cheap Christmas gift for his daughter. He took a plank of wood and he added nails and point values and a plunger, and he found she and her friends played it like crazy. They put it in a local general store for 5 cents a play. Within a year, he and several other partners had a space so large that they had 53 people working in one shop. And in 1931, Baffle Ball was born by Gottlieb, and that was, they sold it for $17.50. You played 5 to 7 balls for a penny, and in a matter of months, Gottlieb sold 50,000 baffle ball games.
Wow.
So that gives you an idea And then through that era, through that decade, other manufacturers got into this. This was a tabletop game at that point. And in 1932, legs were added. The name pinball actually evolved because there were pins physically on the wood that the ball would hit and then drop into a hole. And so through the rest of that decade, things were added like pop bumpers. And importantly, when legs were added, the tilt bob was added, as we know it, early on, because you had to have a way to stop the tilt, to penalize the player for playing if they were roughing around the machine.
Yeah,
and
funny.
By the end
funny.
Of the decade, to wrap this up, there were about 200 titles manufactured in that decade, and there were over 140 manufacturers during that decade of
All right,
pinball machines.
Joe, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We got to take our break. We'll come back with more after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. Fox Ironhead.
Penn State football team is 13th in the final AP ranking of the season. National champion Michigan is, of course, number one. Washington second, Texas third, Georgia fourth, and Alabama fifth. Ole Miss finished 9th and Ohio State 10th. The only other Big Ten team ranked is Iowa at number 24. The Nittany Lions finished the season with a record of 10-3. Penn State offensive lineman Ibrahim Traore has entered the transfer portal. The former three-star recruit saw his first action in four seasons at Penn State this year, playing in just one game. Traore still has 3 years of eligibility remaining. The Penn State fencing team sent 8 fencers to the January North American Cup, with competition wrapping up this week. Penn State freshman Alessio Fukuda finished 13th in the Division I men's foil. Penn State will host Penn, Temple, North Carolina, Columbia, Harvard, and Yale on Sunday in a 9 a.m. start at the multi-sport facility.
Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
State College is looking for book donations to help in the May 2024 book sale. You can drop off your book donations anytime to the outdoor bins at the workshop located at 2197 High Tech Road near the airport. Your donation will help the State College American Association of University Women advance equity for women and girls in our area.
We don't just talk sports. The Fox. We live it. Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Bear Belly's Beverage in downtown State College, located at 258 West Hamilton Avenue within the Hamilton Square Shopping Center. At Bear Belly's, they have over 500 beers, including domestics, imports, microbrews, seasonal selections, ciders, and more. Beer Bellies is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Check out our website at beerbelliesbeverage.com. Beer Bellies Beverage, 258 West Hamilton Avenue in State College. Beer better, Beer Bellies.
Talk about great prices. Center Hall Farm Store has fantastic deals to help you save money all winter long on heating wood pellets.
Come here, Bear. Come on. Come on.
Oh, yeah. And for your ferocious little pomapoo, shepherd, horses, and just about every other farm animal, even your birds. Center Hall Farm Store has created its own perfect, unique mixture of feed, along with commercial feed of your choice. Center Hall Farm Store, 110 West Allison Street, Center Hall. CenterHallFarmStore.com.
Hi, this is Corey Comfort from Joel Comfort Toyota in State College. Are you looking for a dealership to call home? Joel Comfort Toyota is a locally owned family business that has been serving the community for over 45 years. Come see us and let us help you with your next vehicle experience. We're located at 120 East Clinton Avenue in State College, just behind the Waffle Shop on North Athens Street. Or visit us 24/7 at joelcomfort.com. And remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
The title and tag service that is customer-friendly and locally owned is at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned in Pleasant Gap. And as part of the Joel Confer family of dealerships, Monica Prisk is experienced and has been serving customers for 13 years. Cameron Confer is on the title and tag team and is there to help you with all of your title and tag needs. Stop at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned at 475 East College Avenue in Pleasant Gap and have Monica or Cameron answer any of your title and tag questions. Remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
Happy Valley Weather.
Here's your K2 Foxcast. Windy and chilly today with a few flurries and temperatures in the 30s. Diminishing winds tonight, the low around 30. Some sunshine tomorrow, the high 38. There's another winter storm coming at us on Friday. It's liable to start with some snow, then turn over to rain.
Fox Forecast.
Snowstorms likely on the East Coast Tuesday, and we could hit zero behind that event. This is WeatherBell.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
98.7 The Fox.
Let's talk here on a Wednesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. Joe Schall or Joe Scall. What were they calling you in the with the announcements?
Yeah, it was a football announcer called me Joe Scall, but Schall is the correct pronunciation.
Got
Thank
it.
You.
See, I'm absolutely dancing in the studio here listening to Elton John.
It's hard not to. It is a catchy tune.
This is great. All right, we're going to do Tommy. We're going to do Tommy next. All right, come on. All right, for
yeah,
folks.
That pinball wizard moniker really came from that Who, the Who song. But 1975 is when Wizard, the pinball machine, was made. And that, again, I mentioned pinside.com is where you can find out information about pinballs. And that is when Wizard was made. That's probably where the name came from for the actual song. And the website tells you there were over 10,000 of those produced. And it tells you that the value of that game right now, Wizard, is between $1,600 and $1,900. And that's the kind of information you can find easily on pinside.com.
Now, Joe, again, we'll give credit. Town and Gown wrote a nice story about you and the machines and so on. And there are pictures, you know, in the story and so on. And some people are quoted, which is great. I guess, do you have a lot of, I'm not sure how I want to define kids. I'm thinking maybe college age or younger. Or is this primarily folks like you and me, Joe, the older types that grew up with pinball machines? Who's playing these machines when you do your tournament and so on? I mean, are young people showing up, or is it primarily older folk?
Not young people here, but we're talking about tournaments that are sanctioned by something called the International Flipper Pinball Association. And it is an association that promotes pinball worldwide in its sanctions tournaments like the one at my house. There are over 100,000 active players in that database. It gives you a sense of how many people playing. And there are over 10,000 sanctioned tournaments worldwide in 2023. To give you an idea, then, when you enter these tournaments, you earn points and you literally get ranked based on the tournament and how you did in it. Right now, the number one player in the world is a 19-year-old guy named Escher Lefkoff.
Wow.
Who's been playing under the tutelage of his dad for years, and that gives you a sense of, and this is often what happens, people who are middle-aged get their kids into it, and even little kids are playing, and in tournaments, there are specifically women's tournaments now, there are tournaments that have age limitations. So there are an awful lot of opportunities from a standpoint of tournament-based activity.
All right, now for folks out there who somehow really don't even know what a pinball machine is, which is shocking.
What?
All right, but I'm sure there is somewhere.
I mean,
Joe, again, I'm looking at the story. I'm looking at pictures here of some of the machines and so on. And I think I referenced you when we were communicating to set up the interview here. I just said, it seems like a lot of these machines are, well, old. I mean, pinball machines all have a theme, a lot of rock bands. were themes of machines. Movies were themes of machines. And I'm seeing Rush. Now, Rush is from the 70s. You had mentioned something to me about Jaws, a Jaws pinball machine. That's from the 70s. Are there any, A, new machines, and B, machines with a, we'll call it a modern theme, like a today theme? Is anybody making machines like that right now?
Oh, yes. Now, what you mentioned with those two titles is a perfect segue into the modern era, what I'd call a multimedia era, because they were just made. So you'd think they're throwbacks in the sense that Beatles was made, NASCAR was made, Sopranos was made. All of these were made in the last 10 or 20 years. The Godfather was just made. Willy Wonka was just made. So they are new machines by new manufacturers who just got into the business in the last 10, 20 years or so. Pulp Fiction was just made. And these, but they're made with modern technology. So when you play Rush, you choose the song that you want to hear. You see live concert footage up on a high-definition video screen. And the Rush, two of the remaining Rush members actually do the audio call-outs. They tell you what to do. They yell, jackpot. In Jaws, Richard Dreyfuss was hired to do audio call-outs, and you see scenes from the movies. So what you're seeing there is a blend of old and new. You see high definition, you see much more complicated rule sets, and yet what you're also seeing is a retro approach, because this is where the market is right now. For people in the home market like me, they're going to spend the money, and people with barcades are going to put machines out there as well as old machines that people are going to be interested in the theme and the title. So it's old and new together. Does that make sense?
I suppose. Now, Joe, I'll bite, though. I mean, what you just described sounds very glitzy, very flashy. Doesn't sound like the classic pinball machine. Do you like the glitzy stuff, or do you prefer the classic version?
I love pinball at all levels, but the way I would reconcile what you're saying is it's still flippers. It's still hit whatever's lit. It's still basic, and somebody can walk up to it, and that's why what's so nice about it. Star Wars was another machine made as an example, and kids, of course, love to play it. They don't have to understand the deep rule set in order to play it. They just have to flip. They just have to know, oh, here's how I pull the plunger, here's how I flip the ball, and, oh, I just got a jackpot. So they don't have to understand the deep rule set. A player like me, who might literally play a single game for an hour when they get good at it, will understand and follow the deep rule set, where the newer player, the newbie, will just say, oh, I want to hit the ball around, and it's exciting to do so.
All right. Now, Joe, I'm simply curious. Talking about themes, all right, we mentioned rock bands, rock singers, movies, television shows. From your knowledge, what is the weirdest theme of a pinball machine that you've ever come across? Like, for instance, is there a Donald Trump pinball machine?
There is a Donald Trump pinball machine. Let's not call it the weirdest, perhaps, but it is a good example of a homemade or homebrew machine. So there's a Donald Trump pinball machine. You can find it out there on the internet. But the way it was made was, there are plenty of people who do this. There's a guy who made a Bill Paxton, the actor, pinball machine. They retheme a machine by putting on new artwork. And but the funny thing about the Donald Trump one was it was actually the original, I think, was called Secret Agent. So they have a Hillary bobblehead on the machine they put on. They have Donald Trump artwork. They have an original machine that they rethemed and put in new audio in and new artwork on, so that it becomes a new machine, but it's an individual. It's not out there for everybody to play.
All right, now, friends, again, this is your friend Scott, not a Donald Trump fan. I want to play the Donald Trump machine so I can just, like, hit him. Boom, 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 boom. Right. You know, boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Now, here's...
Yeah, and this is somebody privately who's put it out, and if you search on the Internet, you'll find it, and you'll find it in a database online.
Now, Joe...
Let
me ask, all right, let me ask a couple of dumb questions, all right? First off, do I assume that every pinball, in other words, the ball, is the same size or the same, I don't know, makeup or whatever in every machine, or do the balls somehow change?
Well, they're all steel. They're all the same basic size, but there are some anomalies. There are games where there's a little mini play field put in that has a mini pinball, Stewie pinball from... Family Guy, I believe it is. Yeah, yeah. Has a little Stewie pinball, so there's a tiny little one. In Twilight Zone, which was one of the most popular games made, and it's a fantastic game, they used a larger size ceramic ball that they call a power ball, and so you get special scores when you get to that power ball mode. But otherwise, yes, they are the same, and there are people making colored pinballs, glow-in-the-dark pinballs, pinballs with different little emblems on them. There's a lot of people out there who are hobbyists or manufacturers who are doing quirky things just to add variety.
Yeah, you get to those games where you get to a certain level, and now all of a sudden there's two or three pinballs flying around. I'm like, you got to try to hit them all and so on. Now,
somebody who's good, as I am, you can trap. This is one of the keys to being a good player, and kids learn it well, too. Trapping the ball, slowing down the action, just holding the flipper up and seeing if you can actually trap the ball. And there's a three-ball multi-game go, three balls at once, but I can trap two on one flipper and one on the other, and then just control one at a time. Apollo 13 has a 13-ball multi-ball.
Oh, my. Now, Joe,
nobody controls that.
Joe, I've always wondered this, and I honestly have no idea how this works, all right? Tilting. Now, when I was young, I did that too often, all right? Just, you know, give the machine a bump or a nudge, and all of a sudden, tilt, tilt, tilt. I'm like, oh, crap, you know, and then it dies. I'm assuming there's some, I don't know, a level or a gadget or something in the machine that makes it tilt. Explain tilting. How does that work?
So there is, first of all, it is part of the game, nudging and tilting. So good players learn how to do it, learn when it's worth risking a tilt and when it's not. And it's also, this goes back to the business of history, solid state games in the... from 1976 on, in particular, tilt was introduced way back, but that's where it got more sophisticated because it could be programmed. So the operator can determine how many nudges are allowable until a tilt happens. So you can set it to 1, 2, or 3. It is a physical bob, a cylindrical shaped bob that hangs down inside a circular ring, and it hangs inside the left side of the pinball machine, the very near the bottom left flipper. So you can nudge differently based on that knowledge as to where it is. And if you nudge the very top of the machine to, say, free a loose ball, you might not tilt or nudge it. You might not get a warning at all. So the number of warnings is determined by that programming. It has a physical component. It can be made easier or harder, and sometimes you'll find at a location you won't tilt because the bob fell off, because somebody has just shoved it so hard that the bob fell down into the cabinet, and until it's serviced by the operator, you can nudge all you want.
So, in other words, all the machines I played were set to 1. Okay, yeah, I get it.
They're set to 1, and also if you shove them hard enough, the bob will hit multiple times. It'll look like 1 to you, but it might have been 2 or 3 times. So there's a real art to nudging, and the key is not shaking back and forth, left to right, but nudging forward, trying to push the ball up. And by nudging forward, you can often get really good at pushing the ball up without even getting a warning, without even activating the tilt valve.
There you go, strategy. All right, Joe, we only have about 2 minutes left. I noticed from the Town and Gown story that sometimes, apparently, you take your machines on the road, and it looks like a lot of fun. Talk about that.
I have done that in the past. I'm not eager to do that again from a standpoint of moving them and my advancing age, because they weigh 250 to 350 pounds. But I love taking them out for free play for people at State Theater, Down Syndrome, Center Region Down Syndrome Society, other events where people would appreciate the opportunity to go free play. And the key question I get is, are they still making these? And yeah, there's still about 10 new titles a year being made. And it's just a way to generate interest. So I love that opportunity. And when people discover it or rediscover it, they are just thrilled with the novelty of it.
All right, Joe, I'll ask, what is your favorite machine and why?
Attack from Mars was made in 1995. That is mine and many people's favorite machine from the 90s. And it was the programming, it was based on a beam. It was it's not Mars Attacks, the actual movie. It was just a made up sort of a B movie theme. And it has hopping Martians that hop up and down during a multi-ball that you literally hit the targets in front of. They hurl insults at you. It's completely original theme. And part of what I love about it is you might play it for 10 minutes and have a great game and accomplish all the goals, or you might play it for an hour. It's one of those machines that has so many options, if you're really good at it, to master in a short time, as opposed to another game I love called Lord of the Rings, where to achieve everything in Lord of the Rings, which was made, I think, in 2003, you literally need an hour. You need an hour to play that game to get to every single objective, whereas Attack from Mars, you can do so in just a few minutes and still enjoy the game. And then once you get to that point where you've got to what's called the wizard mode, you've achieved everything, it starts over and the challenges become harder.
Well, Joe, I tell you what, we're out of time. We could keep going because this just brings back great memories. But good luck with your monthly tournaments. And we'll mention your website address again when we come back. I might have to check this out sometime, even though I'm a terrible player.
Terrible.
Joe, thanks again very much.
Sure, Jeff and Scott. My pleasure. Thank you.